Blog Talk Radio.
Baruch Hashem, this is Mark Lichtenwalter coming to you live on this fourth day of September 2019. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We are reading The Church and the Gospel by Ogden Kraut. We are covering Chapter 3 tonight, Blessed Are the Persecuted. You can read that for free online at ogdenkraut.com. That's ogdenkraut.com. Click on Read Ogden's Books and then scroll down to The Church and the Gospel. You can also read it for free online at fundamentallymormon.com. We are live streaming on Facebook at facebook.com/LAZURUS1977, and I will be reading the comments that are posted if I see them. And also at YouTube at youtube.com/user/GodIsMyCompass. The channel name is Fundamentally Mormon. I will also be posting these videos on several different groups on Facebook. My two main groups are LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, and Latter-day Unity. So without any further ado, let's dedicate the program and get right into the reading of this chapter, Chapter 3, Blessed Are the Persecuted. Our Father in heaven, we come before thee in the name of thy Son, Yeshua, our Messiah. We dedicate our time and our talents and our lives unto thee, and we ask thee, Father, to bless us as we do these things. Help us to learn the truth of the restored gospel that thou hast given through thy prophet, Joseph Smith. We love thee, Father, and we ask for thy blessing to be upon us as we go through these things. We ask for blessings to be upon the people who listen, that they might come to an understanding of the truth of the gospel, that Zion might be redeemed, that we might all live as thou would have us live. We love thee, Father, and we ask for thy blessings and thank thee for our opportunities and our many blessings. In the name of Yeshua, our Messiah, amen. Blessed Are the Persecuted, Chapter 3 of The Church and the Gospel by Ogden Kraut. Not of the world, shortly after Jesus, or Yeshua, was born, wicked men began to seek his life, and among his first sermons, Jesus told his followers that they too would be persecuted. In his first recorded sermon, Jesus said, "Blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." Matthew chapter 5, verses 10 through 12. Within 3 years, they had persecuted his disciples and crucified the Messiah himself. All of the apostles were soon killed, and many of the disciples were put in prison or slain. These persecutions by the people of the world were expected and even prophesied. It appears that whenever the Lord is teaching his people, the devil is nearby to cause trouble. James wrote, quote, "Know ye not that friendship with the world is enmity with God?" And enmity, it just means opposition. So let's read that again in a little bit more of a common English, at least, language than the older King James Version. But know ye not that friendship of the world is opposition with God? Whosoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of God. James chapter 4, verse 4. Brigham Young also stated, quote, Persecution and hatred by those who love not the truth are a legacy bequeathed by the Savior to all his followers. For he said they should be hated of all men for his namesake. Journal of Discourses, Volume 7, page 42. At the time of the restoration of the gospel, the prophet Joseph Smith stated, quote, "It seems as though the adversary was aware at a very early period of my life that I was destined to prove a disturber and an annoyer of his kingdom. Else why should the power of darkness combine against me? Why the opposition and the persecution that arose against me almost in my infancy?" Let me just say something real quick. Satan knows those who came against him strongest. He didn't have the veil placed over his mind. He knows exactly who we are. We may not even know who we are, but he does, unfortunately. And he can persecute us, and he will. And you may not even realize what kind of a powerhouse you could be in the gospel in the war in heaven. You could have been a magnificent soldier, bringing many thousands, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, to understand the plan of salvation put forth by Yeshua, who the Gentiles called Jesus Christ. But Satan knows who you are, and he knew who Joseph Smith was too. Continuing, some few days after I had this vision, I happened to be in a company of one of the Methodist preachers who was very active in the before-mentioned religious excitement, and conversing with him on the subject of religion, I took occasion to give him an account of the vision which I had. I was greatly surprised at his behavior. He treated my communication not only lightly, but with great contempt, saying it was all of the devil, and that there were no such things as visions or revelations in these days, that all such things had ceased with the apostles, and that there would never be any more of them. So basically, he didn't know the prophecy in Joel, where it says in the last days, the greatest, you know, young men shall have dreams and old men will have visions, and like all of the gifts of the Spirit that would be poured out upon the saints of God in the last days. Like, obviously, this guy didn't know about that. But anyway, continuing on with Joseph Smith, I found, however, that my telling the story had excited a great deal of prejudice against me among the professors of religion and was the cause of great persecution, which continued to increase. And though I was an obscure boy, only between 14 and 15 years of age, and my circumstances in life such as to make a boy of no consequence in the world, yet men of high standing would take sufficient notice to excite the public mind against me and create a bitter persecution, and this was common among all the sects, all united to persecute me. End quote. Pearl of Great Price, Joseph Smith History, chapter 2, verses 20 and 20 through 22. So, there are people in my life specifically that I can say that never knew. So when I used to work out in the oil fields back in 2008 to 2010, there was a woman who was over the shop down at South O'Ray in the oil fields that I worked in. And the minute she saw me, she hated me. And the whole time I worked there, she hated me. She had never met me before. She did not know who I was. She couldn't explain her anger and her bitterness and hatred for me. But she hated me. She didn't know why. I have a neighbor now who lives right behind us. He hates my guts. He doesn't know why. I asked him once. I said, "Why do you hate me so much?" Like, I've never done anything to them. And they're not LDS. The guy says he's Catholic, but I know things about him because the girlfriend that he lives with Maybe that's why he hates me. But the girlfriend that he lives with used to cry on my wife's shoulder about him, this guy, going and cheating on her with other women. He's not a religious man. I asked him why he hated me so much, and he says, oh, first he threatened to kick my butt. But then I asked again, and he said, he came up to me, and he says, I hate the way you look. I hate your face, and I hate your guts. And I said, don't you think that's kind of childish? You don't even know why you hate me, but you hate me so much, like a little child would hate somebody. And this guy's in his late 40s. It's just ridiculous. But these guys don't know why they hate me so much, and they don't know why they hated Joseph Smith so much either. But Satan does. A lot of people are possessed, and I don't want to get too much into that topic, but they're controlled by demons. And those demons know exactly who you are. They knew who Jesus was. Those of us who stood up and fought tooth and nail against Satan in the pre-existence and were generals or whatever in the armies of heaven, he knows exactly who we are. He knows exactly what we did, even if we don't understand who we are or whatever. Anyway, continuing on. True gospel principles have always brought trouble to prophets, patriarchs, and apostles. People didn't have room for new truth. We're on page 28, by the way, for any of you following along. They were content with the few pebbles of information rather than accept new outcroppings and boulders of great knowledge. But even more than just opposing new knowledge, many people are led by an evil influence to actually fight against new knowledge from God. Brigham Young noted this battle between good and evil when he stated, quote, wicked men, Satan and all the powers of hell and hate are at war with every holy principle that God wishes to place in the possession of his children. Journal of Discourses, Volume 8, page 13. It is clear that the devil is opposed to the principles and doctrines of the gospel more than the church himself. The prophet Joseph Smith exclaimed, quote, this generation is as corrupt as the generation of the Jews that crucified Christ, and if he were here today and should preach the same doctrine he did then, they would put him to death. Teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith, page 382. On another occasion, Joseph Smith stated, quote, it is thought by some that our enemies would be satisfied with my destruction, but I tell you that as soon as they have shed my blood, they will thirst for the blood of every man in whose heart dwells a single spark of the spirit of the fullness of the gospel. The opposition of these men is moved by the spirit of the adversary of all righteousness. It is not only to destroy men, but every man and woman who dares to believe the doctrines that God hath inspired me to teach in this generation. Such words were the prophet Joseph Smith to the Nauvoo Legion on the 18th of June, 1844. End quote, Rise and Fall of Nauvoo, B.H. Roberts, Contributor, Volume 8, page 12. October 1887, page 441. Page 29 of the Church and the Gospel. A true Christian or a true Mormon will often arouse some enmity because of his strong beliefs in doctrine and principles that are not in conformity with the rest of society. Jesus knew this and made the following promise, quote, and if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. And if you were of the world would love his own. But because you are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hateth you. Remember the word that I said unto you. The servant is not... Hold on. I got to put this over here real quick. I always hit the keyboard and then it makes my... It shuts off my Facebook live stream. So I'm just going to throw that over there And if we have anybody commenting on anything, I'll read it and I'll try to answer it. But anyway, continuing on. Oops. Maybe I should put that microphone somewhere else. All right. The servant is not greater than his Lord. If they had persecuted me, they will persecute you. John chapter 15, verses 18 through 20. Let's make sure this is still on. Yep, okay. King Solomon seemed to understand the nature of the opposition by saying, quote, "The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him." Psalms chapter 37, verse 32. Since the devil is opposed to truth, he causes trouble, false rumors, suspicions, and eventually persecution to come upon the true followers of Christ. And he uses the saints to do that, not only the saints, but everybody else. But since I've moved into this community, there have been so many people that have made up all kinds of crazy rumors about me, things that I have never said, or things that are way out of whack. But they do that because they don't want people to listen to me. Satan doesn't want people to listen to me. He doesn't want this truth to be revealed. He doesn't want me reading this stuff and going out over the air throughout the nations, which is exactly what's going on right now. This, you may be watching this somewhere close, but it's kind of funny. One of the little kids at my daughter's preschool came up to me and he tugged on my shirt and he says, "My mommy and daddy were watching you on TV last night." And I thought it was funny because, you know, you can like watch these videos on YouTube and smart TVs. You can watch these videos using YouTube. And people are watching me in this community. But this is going out through the whole world, wherever the internet has connections. I get people talking to me from Pakistan and India and China and Japan and all over Africa and Asia and Europe and the United States, the Philippines. I can't keep up with all the people trying to talk to me all the time. That's why I don't respond to people on Messenger so much. But I just don't have the time. But this is going out to the whole world. And Satan hates that. And anything that he can do to try to tear me down and stop this work from rolling forth, he will do. I've had death threats. I've had people threaten a whole bunch of different things. Active members of the LDS Church. And a lot of other people. Anyway, continuing on. The prophet Joseph Smith observed this, quote, "The enemies of the," and I just wanted to say something since we're on this chapter. If you are not a threat to the devil's kingdom, you will live in comfort for the majority of your life. But once you raise your head up and begin to speak the truth, you can expect to receive opposition. And if people, hold on. Oh, I have a question by Mr. Curtis, and I just saw that. I don't know how long it's been on there, but can you elaborate a little more on why you recognize Ogden Kraut? Isn't he affiliated with the All Red Group? No, he's not. Do you consider him inspired? Yes, I do. Okay. I don't agree with everything that Ogden states. I don't agree with everything that Brigham states. I don't even believe that Brigham is a prophet, like in the sense that he was the Lord's anointed. I believe the church was rejected in Nauvoo because of Section 124, and I'm not going to get into that right now. But so my history with Ogden is, well, I was a truck driver over the road for many, many years. I actually was sent home because of a medical problem I was having from my mission after about a year. I felt very, very upset about having to leave the mission. And it's, in fact, I still have dreams about being a missionary. I didn't want to go home, but I was really sick. So anyway, after I got home and I got a little bit better, I didn't really have a place to stay. I stayed with my sister for a while in her apartment, and I had my CDL because I already had training in advanced diesel mechanics. So I was 21 and I went over the road as a truck driver, and I studied like a madman. While I was over the road, I would spend between $200 to $400 a month at Siegel Book and Tape or Deseret Book, and I'd get a lot of fiction audio tapes, but I'd also get a lot of talks. I would go to the church distributions, anything I could get my hands on to read, because I had a lot of time sitting, waiting for loads, getting loaded and unloaded. I'd read a lot. Anyway, so I spent a lot of time doing missionary work throughout the 48 lower 48 states in Canada. A ton of time doing missionary work. And one day I was over, so I talk about God and the restored gospel to anybody I could talk to. In fact, it's kind of funny. See this cross I wear? It's not something that normal Mormons do, right? The reason I started doing that is because I noticed that when Christians would see the cross in the truck stops, they would salute each other and they would talk about God and Jesus and all kinds of stuff. And I thought, well, if I start wearing a cross, then I can talk to more people about the restored gospel. And I've been doing that for over 10 years. I don't know. It's been actually close to 20 years I've been wearing a cross. Okay, so anyway, that's the backstory. So one day I was at a mall in West Valley, Utah, and I'd gone in and I had a couple days off, but I lived in my truck full time. I didn't stay anywhere that often. And even though my family lived in Utah close to that area, I went and took the truck down to some dollar movies that were at the West Valley Mall. Now, and I was sitting out there after the movies in the middle of the night, and the security guard comes over and we start talking, and he has three books from Ogden Krout, and he gave them to me: Compromise and Concessions, Jesus Was Married, and The Mysteries of Creation. And I loved those books. That was where I found Ogden. Now, I don't agree with everything that he believes, but he compiled a ton of stuff. Now, he is not a member, and never, I don't believe he ever was a member of the All Red Group. In fact, his first book, Jesus Was Married, he wrote while he was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And I think it was David O. McKay that asked him specifically to please preserve true doctrine, because there were those in the church that were trying to destroy it or get rid of it. So he was actually asked by the prophet of the church to write the books that he wrote. He was later excommunicated for living plural marriage. He was reordained and given the priesthood by Joseph Musser. And then he gave that priesthood to Kevin, and then I received that priesthood also from Kevin, which is his son, Kevin Kraut. So actually, Ogden Kraut is in my line of authority. Now, I do have a line of authority which I don't believe is valid in the LDS Church, because of what happened from 1921 to 1957, with Heber J. Grant changing the conferral of the priesthood to just ordination. I don't want to get into that either. So thank you for asking. I'm going to continue on with the reading. I hope that answers your question. And I will try to keep watching to see if there's any more questions, but I want to get through this because my mom or my wife is actually not happy with me. She wants to go to bed as soon as possible, and the studio that I am in is actually in our walk-in closet. So, but we didn't get home till late, and it's kind of the way it has to be. So, all right, the enemies of this people will never get weary of their persecution against the church until they are overcome. I expect they will array everything against me that is in their power to control, and that we shall have a long and tremendous warfare. Oh, hey, David. He's just saying that he finally caught me live, so. I'm going to start trying to do these around 4 p.m. if I can. We'll see how things go. I can't commit to anything because it seems like every time I try to commit to anything, something happens and it's just a pain. So anyway, he that will war the true Christian warfare against the corruption of these last days will have wicked men and angels of devils and all the infernal powers of darkness continually arrayed against him. When wicked and corrupt men oppose, it is a criterion to judge if a man is warring the Christian warfare. Doctrinal History of the Church, Volume 5, page 140. And it's like I said before, if you are not being persecuted in some way, it's because you are not a threat to the devil's kingdom. And he doesn't even, you don't matter to him. But as soon as you stand up and start speaking truth and teach and do the things that God needs us to do, I guarantee you, you will receive persecution, and this is the way it is. Blessed are the persecuted. There's a reason why we're going through this chapter. Brigham Young also noted, quote, "As the kingdom of God increases upon the earth, so would the power of the enemy increase in like manner to keep pace with it." Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 249, page 30 of The Church and the Gospel. It may be observed today that most of those who are rejected by society, cast out of their honorable positions, and considered evil probably have some truth within them. Either they are very evil or they are defending true principles. Consider the following comparison. If Billy Graham were really teaching the gospel as Jesus taught it, he would be mobbed and driven just as the disciples of Jesus were. If Joseph Smith taught the gospel of Jesus Christ as the scriptures declare, then he would be persecuted and mobbed, and he was. They both claimed to be followers of Jesus Christ, yet only one received much persecution. This opposition from the world is not for belief or reading the Bible, but because of the difference in the doctrines that they taught. It is important, then, to be well informed on the doctrines of the church more so than the history of the church. The necessity and value of persecution. Brigham Young explained how much value comes from opposition. Quote, "Joseph could not have been perfected, though he lived 1,000 years, if he had received no persecution. If he had lived 1,000 years and led this people and preached the gospel without persecution, he would not have been perfected as well as he was at the age of 39 years. You may calculate that when this people are called to go through scenes of affliction and suffering and are driven from their homes and cast down and scattered and smitten and pilled, the Almighty is rolling on his work with greater rapidity." Journal of Discourses, Volume 2, page 7 and 8, 1853. Page 31. Persecution seemed to follow the early members of the church wherever they went. The saints were driven out of Ohio, then out of Missouri, and finally out of Illinois. Persecution had forced them out of the United States and into the desert wilderness. And during the days when the persecution, or when the church left the United States, they went out to the Salt Lake Valley. That was all part of of Mexico at the time. Within 10 years, 1857, the U.S. government sent an army to put down the Mormons. And this drives me insane. It drives me insane. Because we love, like, the 4th of July, and we love our government so much. They came to exterminate us. It was only because of the blessings of God and the Mormon militia that they were hindered from doing what they wanted to do to us as a people. If it wasn't for the snowstorm that came and the hindrance and what was going on with good old Warren Porter Rockwell and his merry band of militia, they would have come here to commit extermination and war against us. By the time they got here, they were so worn out and so they didn't have food or whatever. You've got to be kidding me. Hold on. I gotta fix this real quick. The live stream on the Facebook went out. I'm just gonna fix it real quick and go live again. And I don't know why it's doing that, so. So I just had to reset my Facebook live stream. But anyway, if it wasn't for what happened, the people would have had the armies of the United States tearing them down. But luckily, they didn't have any food and they were completely worn out. So Brigham Young basically said, you can go to the other side of town and give us all your ammunition and your cannons and everything. And they weren't able to destroy us. Well, Satan had another way of destroying us, and that was through changing gospel doctrines and all of that. But anyway, continuing on, some of the missionaries were called home for their own safety. Influenced by falsehood circulated by Judge W.W. Drummond and others, the federal government sent an army to Utah. When the citizens organized for self-defense, the elders were called home from foreign missions, and the saints who had settled in Carson Valley, and that's in Nevada, and Salmon River, or, that's actually up in Idaho now, on the Green River, which is in central Utah, and in Southern California, were advised to abandon their locations and return to places near the headquarters of the church. And quote, Church Chronology, Second Edition, Revised and Enlarged, Andrew Jensen, 1857, page 57. But such persecutions did not destroy the Mormon religion, but rather they seemed to unite the saints instead of scatter them. Such adversity resulted in more positivity than negative results. For Brigham Young said, quote, you can destroy a true religion, or can you destroy a true religion by persecuting it? No, you will destroy the priesthood. Or I'm sorry. No, what destroyed the priesthood of the Son of God from the earth in the ancient days was it persecution? No. The Emperor Constantine embraced and sent out a decree for all his people to embrace it. See, Rome hijacked the early Christian church and began to screw things up. Anyway, continuing on with Brigham Young, let this people be prospered and all persecution cease, and then every description of character would hasten to join this church. Journal of Discourses, Volume 7, page 145. Do you suppose I am sorry because of persecution? No, I never was in my life, but I have thanked God 1,000 times that the devil is not yet bound. For if he had been, the saints would have gone to sleep. Journal of Discourses, Volume 6, page 269, 1859, or on page 32. Brigham Young reiterated the necessity. Oh my gosh, what the heck is going on here? Cancel, please don't end the video. I need a new laptop. I always need something new, but whatever. We're dealing with it. So this laptop wants to that I'm using the Facebook live stream does not want to work right. But hopefully we can get through an episode here. So Brigham reiterated the necessity of persecution. Quote, when there are no goats to annoy the sheep, the latter will mingle with each other and go hand in hand in full fellowship. But when the goats are among the sheep, they will besmear them with their stink, and they will frisk about and behave so as to actually turn the sheep almost into goats. They will grow short in the hair, look like goats, and stink like them. The master of the flock must therefore do something to preserve the blood of the sheep pure, lest they completely degenerate and altogether become goats. They must be chastened by persecution to drive out the stinking goats from their midst. Journal of Discourses, Volume 6, page 320. Should persecution cease? All of the ancient prophets suffered persecution at various times in their lives. This was realized by the apostles of Jesus, who said to the Jews, which of the prophets have not your fathers persecuted? Acts chapter 7, verse 52. This brings us to the reason why persecution will cease against a true church. Ellen G. White, writing for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, clearly described the reason why she believes it gradually stopped in the Christian church. This is Ellen G. White, not a Mormon. She's a Seventh-day Adventist, and she lived back during the days of Joseph Smith. There is another and more important question that should be engaged, that should engage the attention of the churches of today. The Apostle Paul declares that all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. Why is it then that the persecution seems in a greater degree to slumber? The only reason is that the church has conformed to the world's standards and therefore awakens no opposition. The religion which is current in our day is not of the pure and holy character that marked the Christian faith in the days of Christ and his apostles. It is only because of the spirit of compromise with sin, because the great truths of the Word of God are so indifferently regarded, because there is so little vital goodness in the church, that Christianity is apparently so popular with the world. Let there be a revival of the faith and the powers and doctrines of the early church, and the spirit of persecution will be revived. The fires of persecution will be rekindled. End quote. The Great Controversy by Ellen G. White, page 53. Brigham Young warned of the dangers when persecution should cease against the saints. It would be more disastrous for the church than if they were subject to severe persecution. And when the spirit of persecution, the spirit of hatred and wrath and malice ceases in the world against this people, it will be the time that this people have apostatized and joined hands with the wicked, and never until then, which I pray may never come. Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 327. There is nothing that would so soon weaken my hope and discourage me as to see this people in full fellowship with the world and receive no more persecution from them because they are one with them. In such an event, we might bid farewell to the Holy Priesthood with all its blessings. Journal of Discourses, Volume 10, page 32. When Mormonism finds favor with the wicked in this land, it will have gone into the shade. But until the power of the priesthood is gone, Mormonism will never become popular with the wicked. Journal of Discourses, Volume 4, page 38. And I could say something about Heber J. Grant in 1921 when he became president of the church until his death, and then continuing on with George Albert Smith until 1957, the church under Heber J. Grant, they stopped conferring priesthood and only ordained offices. Now, Charles Penrose and Heber J. Grant tried to get Joseph F. Smith to do this, who was the sixth president of the church just before Heber J. Grant became president, and he told them if they tried to have this done, he would have them both excommunicated. Now, what happened? Heber J. Grant stopped by decree of the church, and you can find this in any missionary handbook, between 1921 to 1957, until David O. McKay changed it back, that they stopped conferring priesthood but only ordained to offices. This was both in the Aaronic and the Melchizedek priesthood. When David O. McKay changed it back in 1957, they had to have a unanimous vote, but David O. McKay wanted to go back and redo all the ordinations and all the temple work because people did not have the priesthood conferred upon them. Because of this, many in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints do not have proper priesthood because people in their lines of authority did not receive it correctly. Luckily, the guy that ordained me and conferred the priesthood upon me was like in his late 90s when that happened down in Richfield, Utah. But I still was reordained and rebaptized, reordained, and all of that by Kevin Kraut and Mark Kemp. And it's a sad thing. The church doesn't want people to know about it, but this is history, and they never fixed it. So many of your lines of authority out there, they are not, they weren't properly conferred back between 1921 to 1957. And a lot of you that think you have priesthood out there, you don't have priesthood, I'm sorry to say. Anyway, continuing on. There was a definite change in the attitude of the world towards the Mormons during the administration of Wilford Woodruff. This dramatic change was commonly noted and was included in the record of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Quote, President Wilford Woodruff, who was then at the head of the church, issued a manifesto announcing his intention to submit to the laws of the land in relation to plural marriage. And actually, they got rid of the Council of 50 and the United Orders at the same time. A lot of people don't know that. And advising all other Latter-day Saints to do the same. A change of feeling ensued. Mormons and non-Mormons in Utah and elsewhere became more friendly with each other. End quote. Encyclopedia Britannica, 14th edition, volume 15, page 810. Part of that is because they gave up so much of who they were as a people of the restored gospel that they weren't as much of a threat anymore. So the persecution began to cease, not all the way at that time, but a lot. But anybody who kept on living the true gospel, plural celestial marriage, or trying to live United Order or any of that, they still became persecuted. In fact, the church sent the church has done a lot of persecution to the fundamentalist people themselves. Not only that, but the governments of Arizona and Utah. And I don't really want to get, if you want to read more about that, go and read Compromising Concessions, which is one of the books that I was first introduced to as far as Ogden Kraut. Good book. Anyway, Elder John J. Carmack spoke about the pivotal times the church had undergone and said, quote, we had a period of isolation in the West, then we had a period of tremendous persecution, and we turned another corner about the turn of the century. During his tenure, President Heber J. Grant moves us to the modern era. Yeah, he did a lot of things to get it so that the church wasn't persecuted because the church wasn't a threat. After that, the church wasn't as much of a threat to the devil's kingdom, so Satan stopped worrying about persecuting him so much. Anyway, during his tenure, President Heber J. Grant moved us into the modern era. We were no longer in isolation. We became a part of the world, the business community, the intellectual community. That was a major corner that we turned. Church News, January 13th, 1990. This new friendship with the world was especially important to Heber J. Grant. Quote, this is Heber J. Grant. I am thankful that wherever I have traveled during this past 6 months, I have found a feeling of respect, a feeling of love in the hearts of many for the Latter-day Saints, in the hearts of those who are not of our faith. I heard many very splendid comments while in Washington by the members of the president's cabinet, by senators and representatives, and by officials of the government in the Federal Reserve, banking departments, and in others wherever I went, and with all the people that I met, bankers in New York, Chicago, San Francisco, and other cities, all part of the Illuminati, all part of the Bohemian Club, all part of the CFR. Yeah, like Heber J. Grant sold us for a mess of pottage. Not as bad, well, maybe as bad as Wilford Woodruff. But anyway, in other cities, I have heard good things said of the Latter-day Saints. we are coming into our own, so to speak. Conference report, April 4th, 1920, page 12. And this is right before he became president of the church. Another quote of his: "My greatest happiness I find in the goodwill and friendship that is developed among all classes of people at home and abroad towards the Latter-day Saint Church. During my lifetime, in place of everyday persecution and bitterness, we now enjoy the high regard and happy association with all denominations." Salt Lake Tribune, November 22, 1938. He wasn't a threat to the devil's kingdom because they gave up so much of the gospel as restored by the prophet Joseph Smith, by Jesus through the prophet Joseph Smith. Anyway, and even today it is considered to be an important accomplishment. Quote, "Never has the church had the opportunity as it has today. The church is the most attractive religious body in the world. Its image has never been as good as it is today." Teachings of Ezra Taft Benson, page 171. Apparently, the LDS Church no longer has any major distinctive doctrines with which the rest of the world need be concerned. To summarize, and we're almost done here. Number one, Christ and his disciples generally suffered persecution, prison, and death. Jesus indicated that it would be so with his faithful followers. Number two, persecution began with Joseph Smith immediately after his first vision, and it happened before that too. It continued consistently against both him and the church, and the prophet was eventually murdered for his testimony. Number three, the prophet Joseph Smith said that Satan is at war with every holy principle, which indicated that it would always be so. Number four, he also prophesied that the adversary would always be opposed to those people who have a single spark of the spirit of the fullness of the gospel. Number five, prophecies and teachings indicate that as the kingdom of God would grow, so would persecution increase against it. But that doesn't happen in the LDS Church. It really doesn't. Because they're not a threat to the devil's kingdom. Because they don't do what God had asked them to do through the prophet Joseph Smith. They can accept that Joseph was a prophet all they want. If they're not willing to actually be obedient to what God has asked us as a people to do, we're not a threat to the devil's kingdom. We're on page 36 of the Church and the Gospel. Number six, the promise has been made that that persecution would never destroy true religion, and God has promised the righteous that he will always fight your battles. Number seven, persecution drives the weak and the wayward out of the church, while the absence of persecution has a tendency to draw the wicked into the church. Number eight, when persecution ceases, it indicates a compromise of principles and a loss of priesthood powers. Number nine, a noted change of the attitude towards the church occurred during and after the administration of Wilford Woodruff. Number 10, as persecution stopped, society began to speak well of the Mormons. Heber J. Grant noticed that friendship developed among all classes of people. Number 11, today the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is known as a world church and has stakes in many nations of the world with very little, if any, persecution. So anyway, that's the end of that. Sorry about the Facebook live stream shutting off so many times. If you want to find these videos, I'm going to post the links for them. You can also look in fundamentallymormon.com as well as youtube.com/user/GodIsMyCompass. And at blogtalkradio.com/fundamentallymormon. I'll post this on my pages at Zion's Redemption Bookstore and also in my groups LDS Last Days Prophecy and Gospel Discussions, LDS Gospel Mysteries, and in a group that I admin, LDS, are actually Latter-day Unity. So we're not taking any phone calls tonight, and I don't see any questions up on the chat, so I'm going to end it with that. It's time for my wife to go to bed. She wanted to go to bed a while ago, and I was like, I got to do the radio show. So anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Take care, everyone. God bless and goodbye.